There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Hour number two on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. And it is the second Tuesday of the month. We're going to be talking with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. And a big thank you also to John Sharp. We'll talk to him more tomorrow about a handful of things. The meeting tonight he's going to. And we'll get into a discussion of the latest here on the... You thought the toll... Just when you thought the toll... discussion was over, as you hear, it is not over. It's still going on, and we'll give you more on that coming up. All right, it is the second Tuesday of the month. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here, Sean.
Good to have you here. And it's funny because before I always solicit, I say, hey, you can either call when the sheriff's in here or you can text in your question before he gets in here, and I'll ask it for you. And they like ask, usually, other than concealed carry, we get a variety of questions.
Sure.
Today I got a whole bunch of the same question, and it goes off the news of last week with Walmart saying, which I can go back through all my rants about how there were so many holes in what they said. They said they weren't going to sell the handgun ammunition. They weren't going to sell ammunition that works in modern sporting rifles. And I pointed out there's a lot of handguns that shoot rifle ammunition and rifles that shoot handgun ammunition and, bolt-action rifles that shoot the same rounds that come out of semi-automatic modern sporting rifle. But with that being said, Walmart stopping selling ammunition, and they also said not to carry your gun in the store. Walmart's going to be gun-free. Sheriff, can Walmart say... Walmart can say whatever they want, but can they enforce that?
They can only they can enforce it, but just saying it is not enforcing it. They can post placards, no guns allowed, and that legally will prevent open carry into the store. But it does not affect someone with a concealed carry license. Someone with a concealed carry license can still go into Walmart unless they have a guard posted at the entrance and the entrance secured and barricaded, so to speak, with a turnstile or something like that. Otherwise, they can't prohibit a concealed carry person. Now, the person going on should have it concealed, though, and not be
right.
Open carrying it.
Yeah, we could talk about that and how to do that properly. Is it the same with the open carry? You had said in the past, if somebody, because you have a legal right to carry a gun, and a private business says no guns, that what they move forward with, if they see you have a gun, it's a trespassing issue. It's not a concealed carry. It's not a gun issue, right?
It's no longer a gun issue. There used to be a statute on the books where a person's prohibited carry a firearm on the premises of another. That law was amended several years ago, and when it was amended, they forgot to put a penalty in there. So the law exists without a penalty, and therefore someone was arrested for that, carried it to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court ruled the statute of carrying a weapon on a person's premises other than your own to be illegal, and so it's been thrown out, and there's been no effort to, if you would, fix the language in that bill.
So it now becomes like a right to refuse service kind of
thing. That's right. Yeah, it becomes
private business.
Hey, you've got this gun. Hey, I don't want to allow guns on my property.
I don't want you in my store. Leave.
Right, get out. And then that's
becomes, so if law enforcement comes, y'all are coming to remove the person, not because they have a gun, but because the private entity said, I don't want that person here.
On my property. That's correct. It would be trespassing third degree if they refuse to leave, at the request of the owner.
That's one of the things
people... Or second degree maybe too.
And why the two? Yeah,
Well, some of it has to do where stuff is posted and someone goes on it, but when you've actually physically remained in a place after being towed, I think okay. it bumps up to a second degree.
When people go in places, and we'll talk about Walmart more specifically here in a second, but they go in places, they see signs, no guns. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen these no guns allowed in here, whatever. Somebody's got a concealed carry permit. They, and you're pointing this out. The only way that that is enforceable, you just went through it, but I want you to go back again. And I've often said it's like picture going into Government Plaza, picture going into the airport, right? I mean,
that is correct.
There has to be, if we are not allowed the right to carry concealed, then you have to, I'm putting this in layman's terms, tell me if I'm right. You, the business or the place or whatever, have to take over my security. You now become responsible for my security.
Well, that's one. That's another way of looking at it. I mean, think that would
having
be
an armed
civil
officer
liability.
There.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah, I mean, to quote specifically from the law, it says, by the continuous posting of guards and the use of other security features, including but not limited to magnometers, key cards, biometric screening devices or turnstiles, or other physical barriers. So without those, you walk right in with your concealed carry.
So
now there are
by definition,
a few places that are prohibited by law, such as the courthouses, city council chambers, and county commission chambers, if a meeting or a special meeting has been called.
But those places all, if I remember correct, I mean, I only know here, and when I go to Government Plaza, you got a clear security.
Yeah, you got, and see, there's turnstiles and a security officer, so it's...
The way I see that, when I do that, and I go through, and I don't, then I look at those officers there, and now they're responsible for my security.
Sure, that, and that's what how it's supposed to work in those, in a... environment like that, a clean environment, the people inside are supposed to take care of you when they,
right.
when they disarm you. You know, and it's disconcerting a little bit that the concealed carry people are losing their rights to go into the stadiums
yeah.
now with the new policy, but, mm-hmm. the concealed carry permit people are not the problem, but now they're subject to not being able to protect themselves when mm-hmm. they leave those places and or when they come there, they have to leave their weapon in the car, and the car is subject to be broken into and the weapon being stolen there.
Yeah, we talk about those gun-free zones where somebody might focus.
Yeah.
I applaud the, whatever we need to do to make we make the stadiums a safe place to go
sure.
watch a football game. I would go back and argue I wanted that to happen at schools, too, mm-hmm. in our area, that it hadn't happened. But you make it a big gun-free zone. As Walmart... even though they can't legally do it, they're going to kind of telegraph a message, right, that they are a gun-free zone.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, and that's why I just want to put that out, because a lot of concealed carry permit holders are unsure, maybe, of their legal rights. And
but we legally can still go in Walmart.
That's correct.
Concealed
They've got
carry.
To post a continuous guard to keep you out.
There we go. Coming right back. More with Sheriff Sam Cochran right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
120 FM Talk 106.5, and it is the second Tuesday of the month. We get to talk to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. And yeah, this story is of concern to a lot of people. And there's other places that have done this, but Walmart's the big Magilla. This is getting attention.
And I saw where a lot of retail stores now have jumped on a bandwagon doing the same thing.
But so everybody understands, if you're just joining us again, too, Sheriff, you said, unless, kind of lay it out, somebody has a concealed carry permit.
That's right.
In Alabama, what is the law?
In Alabama, the law is open carry. You could go into a public place with a weapon, but if they post signs, no weapons, then you're prohibited from coming in there.
Okay.
And I think that's what Walmart is probably doing. They've at least publicly ask all their patrons not to come in with weapons. But that does not, in the state of Alabama, prevent someone with a concealed carry permit to go into the store unless they've continuously posting a guard at the entrance with turnstiles and other physical barriers.
Like what you would see at the airport or
That's right.
stadium or
the
like
stadium or city county council when yeah. you go in the front doors and you go through a metal detector and you got
But just a sign.
Just a sign does not stop a concealed carry.
Let's move on to the next part of this. If you were, God forbid, in some place that had posted that, and mm-hmm. you had a concealed carry, and you had to defend yourself or the life of an innocent
mm-hmm.
with that handgun, with that concealed weapon, there would be no. I mean, it
would be
seen. It would be seen just as if you did it anywhere else.
Yeah,
there would be no encumbrance upon that move because you were in some place that had posted.
Posted a sign. That's correct. Now, the people that don't understand the law or choose not to learn the law may disagree, but they would be legally.
Well, that's why I ask you. Your job situation. Is in law enforcement. Yes. So that's why I'm asking you, trying to figure that out. Because there's would it be different state to state?
Yes.
The
it
same way
be,
we
it
have
could
different
be state to state. Yeah.
Okay. So what we're talking about is Alabama.
Alabama, that's right.
The law here. Mm-hmm. Even though Walmart, you know, is everywhere, the scenario we're laying out is a Walmart in Alabama.
That is correct.
And somebody with a concealed carry permit in Alabama going into Walmart in Alabama.
Or someone from another state with that state's concealed carry can legally come into Alabama with that. We accept their concealed carry, so they could go in that same store.
What about the situation we're talking about, the metal detectors now? At this, 20 metal detectors went out to stadiums in Mobile County?
Yes.
After the person, after the 9 shot 2 weeks ago. As a law enforcement perspective, that's a tough thing to police right there. I mean, a big stadium, people everywhere.
Well, I think you're going to see that it affects the attendance, perhaps, but certainly Mobile County School System is within their right to make that decision. But as a result of that, they've had to bring in additional security officers to man the metal stations because, again, to prevent any type of weapon coming in, you have to have a continuous setting of a guard there.
What this is doing is basically reemphasizing and explaining what you said about Walmart. Here's the difference. If they're going to say that there's no guns
in stadiums,
they have to secure the stadium.
Have to continuously post a guard at the entrance and or have physical barriers.
Yeah, I look at these situations. I don't know. There's not an answer to it. Maybe there's some ideas. But you know, you can only secure so many things.
That's right. I mean, I think the officials that involved in this had to make a decision and want to make a quick decision to make people feel safe at those areas. But as so many of these things, when something happens, it erodes some more other individuals' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm concerned about, you know, people leaving their weapons in their vehicles, you know, and if the vehicles get broke into, of course. But it's just, you got to go one way or the other.
But this, I mean, this goes into a bigger question. And I don't want to get, I guess, this didn't happen when I was a kid. Maybe it did. Maybe it did. But there's a scenario where it makes me angry, but on top of it, it makes me sad.
Yes, sure.
That you have something that to us is so much of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Friday night football game.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
High school football game. And this, all the stuff that goes around it. That 9 people were shot. There, unbelievably, nobody dead.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. And in this case, like many other similar cases, apparently people knew this young man had a weapon and had it for a couple of months, had postings on his Instagram. And so it was irresponsibility by him as well as anybody that knew him that knew he had that weapon, irregardless of if he was being bullied.
Yeah, and what do we do? You know, I see that people are coming up with ideas. I like people that try to come up with ideas that'll help some ideas of maybe diversion and getting people into putting them in the boxing ring and doing some different things out there. But there's something has changed. I'm not saying because I'm a person on here when they say, oh, this mass shootings is something new. And I point out, you know, 1923 in Grand Rapids, Michigan, one of the bigger, you know, school shootings ever. So it's not that it's brand new. But it seems to be more prevalent these days.
Well, right now it is. And I think if you look historically, you'll see a lot of different fads and different things that sort of come along and then they gradually passed. I mean, back in the 70s, we had hijackings of airplanes, you know, and everybody'd go to Cuba. And then we started having, going postal. We got that term, but it was just originally with postal workers. And then it spread to other businesses and stuff. And we still have some of that, but we don't have, in my opinion, near what we used to have of workplace violent shootings because rules and regulations were put in effect that said, if you so much as make a threat, you're out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that separates the people that are just running their mouth from the real crazies.
Yeah.
And so the one that makes that threat afterwards, you know you've got a serious problem and it should be addressed. And I think they have been addressed in many workplaces.
This texter says, since I can't take in my weapon and I go into an establishment that's gun-free and I get hurt because I couldn't protect myself, can I sue that establishment?
That's a good question for a lawyer, but I don't necessarily think so, unless that establishment did something that contributed to the cause of the injury.
So, I mean, what do you think going forward? Because you could say this, and I can play this game. I'm usually on the other side of this argument, so I'll play the mm-hmm. other side. So you secure the stadium with the metal detectors going in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you can say, well, then the violence is just going to move to the parking lot. Okay, then we're going to secure the parking lot. Well, then the violence is going to move across the street from the parking lot. What keeps being the same in each of these? The violence, right?
That's right, yeah.
You can secure one place and secure, but it doesn't eliminate the violence. It just moves it.
That would be correct, I think. You know, maybe it eliminates some just because you're keeping parties separate or something of that nature. But, yeah, it's just one of the, you know, flaws of society. There are those among us that can't behave or have serious issues, and it's really confined to small numbers, but they make huge splashes when they do something wrong.
True, and I've argued that as well. If you look at the number of deaths by firearm, handgun onesie twosies mm-hmm. across the country, nobody speaks of those, but they so outnumber these mass shootings and number of casualties.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like teenagers and automobile deaths.
Yeah.
Far more teenagers are killed in automobile accidents and deaths than combined of homicides and suicides.
Yeah, and that's another thing that contributes when those stats are rolled out on gun deaths in this country. Mm-hmm. They don't separate out. People hear the big number, and suicides are included.
Suicides are a huge number of gun deaths.
You know, and that's, I want people to know that when they hear they'll say, well, there have been X number of gun deaths, mm-hmm. that those have not, those suicides are included in those overall numbers that they
mm-hmm.
roll out.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
While we're talking about the guns, though, we have, once again, a situation where we have people that are underage have guns.
That's right. And it's the proliferation of guns. I mean, there's so many more guns are owned in the United States today than were 15, 20 years ago. And I equate some of that to President Obama, that people started these rumors that he was going to take away your guns. And every time something would happen, the gun sales would go up.
It was very good for Colt and Ruger.
Now they have financial problems, I think, because everybody that could afford a gun has bought a gun.
Yes.
There's no more new buyers. But
right, they need to threaten. Again, they're going to take some away to help the economy. But so you think it's just the number of guns. I mean, we talked about those being stolen out of vehicles and all those things that they're getting.
That's where the teenagers get them from thefts. And if you follow some of this home video and stuff on Ring or other, my neighborhood and stuff, you see all these young teenagers walking the neighborhoods at night, breaking into cars, just pulling on doors. And a lot of those cars have guns, and it's an easy way to make a chunk of money, you know, to sell that gun. And I mean, it's the same teenagers going in different neighborhoods stealing at night.
Yeah, you told me that. It's like rings, and they're doing it. It's not.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like their gig. Let's go to Mike in Gulf Shores. You're on with Sheriff Cochran. Hey, Mike.
Hey. My question was, what about retired law enforcement and their right to carry with this Walmart deal and the stores and all that's going on?
I think you would have the. I think the law would be the same as a concealed carry, because essentially the law that regulates retired law enforcement gives them authority. It's a federal law that allows a retired police officer, if he maintains his qualifications in the shooting range yearly, that becomes a permit acceptable anywhere in the United States. And so the Walmart in the state of Alabama can't prohibit you unless they post a guard.
Yes, okay. And would it apply to the retired when they post a guard the same as it would just with a permit?
Yeah, I think so. They could prohibit you from coming in with it, even if you, you know, were retired and properly licensed.
If there's a posted guard.
Yeah, if there's a posted guard, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I appreciate your answer on that, Sheriff.
Yes, sir.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for the call. What do you want folks looking out for right now? What's going on with the Mobile County Sheriff's Office that people need to know about?
Well, things are going real well right now for us, I think. Unfortunately, we apprehended or caught in the act the two burglars that were hitting all over the county and the city stealing cigarettes, and they met their demise and fleeing from the police. I went to that scene, and it was awful.
I just saw the car afterwards.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Yeah. I mean, you got two bodies, one pinned in the car halfway out and one laying out on the grass where he ended up, and cigarettes scattered everywhere, and you know, these were two career criminals, over 30 years worth of arrest, just nonstop for 30 years with intermittent things. They were just lifelong criminals, and they...
People ask, why were they back out?
Yeah, they had served time for different things, from robberies to lots of thefts and burglaries and petty crimes and all kinds of crimes, but I think they were just two people that could not survive in society without living from crime.
All right. Remind folks, too, online with Mobile County Sheriff's Office, whether the app or the Facebook.
They can follow us on Facebook. They can download our app. We have a website that some people can still go to, but the others will direct you to the website if there's something there you need to look up. You can download information on getting a pistol permit, and you can follow crime trends, where crimes are occurring throughout Mobile County.
All right. Very good. As always, I appreciate your
time.
Glad
to be here. Thank you.
And I can't wait to get you back next month.
Sure thing, Sean.
All right. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. And coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. You know those tents you see on the sidelines? The medical tent? We'll get the story behind those and those coming to high schools right here in our area when we return. All right. The story's coming up. Y'all stay close.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Big thank you to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. You get to do that each month. And yeah, I kind of ripped out of today's headlines and the questions about Walmart and their moves last week. So good to hear from the sheriff. So I mentioned as we went into the break that we would talk about the tents. And it's very funny because in a conversation before we went on, my buddy Ed Rowan and I are talking about camping and tents. And I said, wait, no, we're talking about medical tents as well. And it's a real treat to have Ed in here and a name y'all know from on the field. But we'll talk about what goes on the sideline as well. Baron Huber, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank y'all for having me. I appreciate it.
Remember, of course, inside linebacker, University of Alabama, Roll Tide. And now coming to our area to talk about the tents here. These are the tents that were made famous in Tuscaloosa.
Absolutely, yeah. The idea was born by Jeff Allen, who's the head athletic trainer. And for years, he had been working on an idea where they could, you know, he could bring a... In essence, a private exam room to the sideline,
and it moves so darn fast. It looks like it's like
five seconds.
Right.
I mean, literally, a child could do it. You know, if they could lift it, it is kind of heavy, but 5 seconds, it's up and down, and you know, the athlete gets the privacy that they deserve, and you can give a thorough on-site, you know, evaluation of an injury or a concussion protocol, and man, it's quick and easy.
Okay. Now, this is going to be one of these questions. All great inventions that come out, somebody says, why didn't anybody think about that any earlier? You know, why was it till, you know, like I'm sure somebody at the point that they discovered the wheel went, we should have done that a while ago. You know, we'd gone all those years without something like that.
Well, especially when you think about the hyper-focus we have on privacy in your healthcare, right?
Yes.
You go to the doctor's office, and, I mean, it's like Secret Service, right? They blot your name out after you get called. You have to have the door shut at all times.
Right.
You know, you basically got to give away your firstborn for somebody to get your records. And so, you know, when you think about what we have at our disposal as patients in the clinical sense or even at the hospital, we have none of that for athletes.
Yeah.
You're just laid out on the piece of laid out on the table like a piece of meat.
Right.
And here's a guy.
Trainers poking on you.
That's exactly right. Here's a guy, you know, doing everything that he would do if he was not on a sideline.
Right.
It would be done in private.
Right.
And that's my passion.
Well, this is something that, you know, started there in Tuscaloosa, but obviously went through college football, now coming to high school.
Well, thanks to Taylor Martino and Taylor Martino Law Firm, and thanks to Ed for buying into what my dream has been for this, which is bringing, you know, privacy to every athlete. Taylor Martino has provided a sideline tent to every high school here in Mobile and Baldwin County. And it's just unbelievable. It hasn't been done anywhere else. You know, to me, this is the first time that I can remember, you know, business not just investing in the community, but investing in the name of player safety. And to be able to bring this to what would be a luxury for a lot of kids and a lot of parents, to be able to bring what I believe is a right that the athlete has to have this privacy, is just huge. It's unbelievable. And it's all just an idea if it wasn't for Taylor Martino bringing the idea to fruition and putting it into action.
Well, these tents are going to be, I guess, they stay with the field or stay with the team? How does that work?
Yeah, so they're actually going to stay with the program, okay. And they'll travel with the trainer, travel with all sports. It's not just a football thing. You know, true. I'm a football player, played at Alabama, but my passion is for athletics, period. Athletics teach so many things across so many levels in life, and it's been so influential in my life. And this is something that I wish I would have had when I suffered my injuries. And so it's not just a football thing.
You were there. Saban was just how many years did you have when Saban?
So I was recruited by Mike Shula. So I was 2 years with Mike. He got fired. We brought in Nick Saban. Right. I was 3 years with him.
Okay. And we were there fortunate for the transition.
I was there for the transition. Yeah, if you want to call that.
Program.
Yeah, the coming, if you will.
Pick your brain on that here.
Yeah, go ahead. I got some good stories.
But just to talk on the tents for a second. So the tents arrived.
The tents didn't come till they made their debut in 2015 at the national championship when we played Clemson. I believe that's right. 2015, 2016. Can't remember. And that was their debut. And then a short year later, the NFL invested in it for all of their teams. And so if you watch an NFL game, all 32 teams have one on each sideline. And I thought that was a great idea that, you know, the NFL invested in it. But what about the masses? And the masses are in high school. Mm-hmm. There's more high school players 10 times over than there is college or professional. And being able to find a sponsor like Taylor Martino to bring what is really a luxury for public schools. You know, I mean, there's their haves and have-nots.
Right.
And unfortunately for most of our public schools are have-nots from the financial end.
Sure.
You know, to have a sponsor like Taylor Martino to be able to step up to the plate and knock it out of the park and bring that reality to athletes is just, it hasn't been done yet, and I hope it gets done more and more.
This is good, and I got to talk to you because, I mean, Ed and I went to the same high school, played sports for the same high school. We didn't have these things.
And we were just sitting out there, you know, buck naked. I mean, if it was a groin injury, you were really going to be embarrassed.
It's true.
Yes.
So you saw this. How did you decide this is the right thing for Taylor Martino to do?
Well, my partner, Steve Martino, is a huge supporter of athletics, and so is the whole firm. And he was the one that was initially made contact with. And, you know, and you had Baron Huber, this, you know, big old Alabama football star. And, I mean, he's a big guy, so, you know, you're kind of intimidated by his presence. And he's selling you, but he's charming as can be. And, you know, plus just the opportunity to partner with Jeff Allen and Baron Huber and their company. To help athletics, help high school athletics. I mean, it was a win-win. We wanted to do it from the very get-go. And, I think what we're telling the athletes is that, you know, we care about you and you're important and your dignity is important when you get injured and you get some privacy there. So I think it's a small thing, but I think it's a huge thing. And, you know, anything that Jeff Allen is involved in, I mean, he was the national trainer of the year, I think, last year. Isn't that right, Baron?
Absolutely. And he works every day with Nick Saban, which is a compliment and a feat. For 10 plus years, that's not easy.
Just that in itself. And this guy, Jeff Allen, I mean, he is a saint. I'm telling you, I've talked to him on the phone. I told him, I have this shoulder pain or something. And then within 30 minutes after we hung up, he sent me a 3-page physical therapy regimen. And I'm thinking, wow, I mean, how does
after
that happen?
Just a phone call and then.
Yeah, yeah. So Jeff Allen is just, he's an amazing person. And whatever he's accomplished, he's earned it and he deserves it. And Baron is a great representative for that, for the university, for Jeff Allen and their group. And we're just pleased to be able to help athletes.
So are we going to be seeing these tents on the sidelines when?
So they this year is our first year where they're on every sideline in Mobile and Baldwin County. All so 20
Friday night, we're seeing one of these tents Friday night.
You're going to see one Friday night. Yep. Yes, they started this year. We've been on this third week. Is this week three here?
This is week three.
So week three now, and you know, it's been awesome getting it in the hands of these schools and seeing their trainers and their coaches, you know, and how appreciative they are that Taylor Martino would provide them this ability, because, you know, and otherwise it's a luxury. It's a luxury item. That's the way people look at it because of the cost.
But it's a privacy item.
It's a huge privacy item. And it's an area that certainly being an athlete and having traumatic injuries, breaking my right ankle, my first catch in my college career, you know, that's something I wish I would have had the ability to have that privacy. And if nothing else, just to have my moment, because you prepare especially in football, you practice 10 times more than you play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you practice and you play and you spend, you know, in my case, I was 22 years old, so, you know, 10 plus years of playing sports, and then my right ankle is just dangling like a limb. You know, the first thing you think of is my career's over. Well, that's a pretty big moment.
Yeah.
And so to be able to have that dignity, like Ed mentioned, you know, in that moment would be huge.
I'll talk more about that when we get back. Also, yeah, I want to pick your brain. You're there, the transition as Nick Saban came to town. I can't wait to hear what that was like from behind the scenes. We'll talk more about that when we come back right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk 106.5, and welcome back, Midday Mobile. Talk about something you'll be seeing Friday night when you're at the high school football game and you see that tent on the sideline. Yeah, just like the tents on the sideline at the University of Alabama in the pros, and now at high schools right here, because Taylor Martino, my buddy Ed Rowan in from Taylor Martino, steps up. And Baron, you've been telling us about these tents and the move that Taylor Martino did to make them available. They travel with the programs now, so schools that couldn't afford them before, they got them.
Yeah, everybody's got them, and not just football, right? I mean, that's
They keep going back to that, but you're right. It travels with the
It travels with the team. Every athlete gets the ability to have that privacy and dignity in those injured moments, and really too. You know what we find is the athletic trainers and the physicians that are on site at the games. They like it because they can get the athlete calm and do a more thorough evaluation of the injury, and that's huge. I mean, you got to think, you've been playing, your adrenaline's mm-hmm. running, then you get hurt, and then you come to the sideline, you got mom and dad, you got the family, you got the fans, everybody's staring at you. To be able to get the athlete into a private environment, get them relaxed, and then be able to approach them to make your evaluation is huge.
Yeah, it's both sides. It's the athlete, but it's also the trainer. There's not the distraction.
Absolutely, and what we see too is a lot of times the trainer will bring mom and dad or guardian mm-hmm. into the tent and say, "Hey, you know, I know you're probably scared and it looked bad, right? You're wondering what's going on. This is your son or daughter out there. Why don't you come in? We're gonna do our evaluation and be with them and just kind of get everything calmed down or they'll make the evaluation and bring the parent in and say, okay, this is what we found. This is what we're gonna do. This is he's good to go back in, or hey, I think we need to take him to the hospital, or he's gonna be out the rest of this game. And so it's just a private moment for athletes, trainers, physicians, and even family.
You've seen it obviously firsthand, not only as a player, but you said your first catch.
My first career catch. Yeah, it was a stellar 4-yard reception that I got tackled on, and I broke my right ankle. And you sit there and you're kind of like, all right, now what? And the panic would be a simple term for what I felt.
Yeah, now what? I mean, the whole thing resides on your ankle. That's
exactly right. You got a bum wheel, and you don't. You know, it's obviously bad enough to where you can't move it, and you wonder. You know, my first thing was, am I ever going to walk again? Am I career over? I mean, you just got all these things running through your head. You got 100,000 people watching you. You got a couple million on TV.
Yeah.
And really, I deserve the moment to have to myself, and I right. deserve the privacy and dignity to that moment, just like you would have, or I would have, or Ed would have, if you went into the doctor's office.
Right.
And so that's what Jeff Allen was able to create, was a private exam room on the sideline for the athlete. And Taylor Martino, they were able to make that a reality for kids and parents and trainers and physicians here in Mobile and in Baldwin County.
So, talking about your career, you're there at the transition. My children are young enough that they know Saban.
Sure.
That's what they know. All right. I was there when there was back in 92, there was another national champion, another coach there at Stallings in those days. But in my children's world, it's Nick Saban. You're there at the transition. That was probably one of the biggest I'd say the second biggest, if not the biggest, transition at the University of Alabama. What was it like behind the scenes?
We got to think, we had 60, 90 days where we didn't even have a head coach. I mean, we played in the Independence Bowl that year.
That's right.
With Joe Kines. We didn't have a head coach. And,
Were y'all hearing rumors or anything?
We were hearing rumors. You know, Rich Rodriguez's name came up. We thought we were really, really close to getting him. And, you know, I'll never forget after practice, Joe Kynes got us all together and said that Rich Rodriguez had turned down a gold mine for a coal mine. And, of course, the only way, you know, in typical Joe Kynes fashion. We were kind of orphaned there for a while. And I'll never forget my roommate, who was Evan Cardwell from North Alabama, waking me up one morning at Bryant dorm and saying, "We hired Nick Saban." And I was like, "What? From the Dolphins?" And
he said he wasn't going to leave. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's my first memory of knowing that things were changing.
First team meeting with Nick Saban. What's that like?
I would be lying to you if I didn't. The very first thing when he walked through the door was I noticed how short he was. Right? I mean, right. it was just the first inclination.
This guy was a QB? What?
That's exactly right. And then when he got to the podium, it was almost as if everyone in the room collectively took a breath in, inhaled, and held it till he was done talking. I mean, he commands focus in the room. And, you know, one of the things that he said was, "I realize you didn't ask me to be here, but you got to realize I didn't ask some of you to be here either. And we're going to have to find a happy medium, and things are going to be different. And, you know, we're going to do our best to make it easy, you know, an easy transition, but things are going to be different." And he kind of went on after that. But, you know, it was a heck of a move by Mal Moore. And it's just one of those places in time where I just feel lucky that I could, you know, be a really small part of a really big thing.
But I know cliche to say, but you're learning life lessons at the same time you learn in football that you got to in that kind of program.
Yeah, you know, when you're young, you don't sit there and think about what you're going to be doing at 33, right? You don't think, "Oh, yeah, this guy's going to, you know, tell me something that I'm going to use in 10 years when I'm a father."
Right.
The more that I'm out of the program, the more I realize winning a national championship and being a part of a winning team is really minuscule compared to what I gained for working for Nick Saban for 3 years. And, you know, he's the best to ever do it. If Nick Saban wanted to be a professional and run, you know, a company, it'd be a Fortune 500 company. You know, he's just that kind of great. And to see somebody not only do it, but do it every single day, whether we played Chattanooga or Auburn or LSU, you know, that's not a cliche.
It's almost my joke about him, but it's true, right? He takes every game. I hear him. He's pressured before one of the maybe the not as tough games coming up, and I'm like, is he really that focused?
He really is. It's not a show. It's legit. I mean, that's who he is. That's what he believes in, and that's what he's built.
And he has the best rants on media there is, though.
Don't you love that?
I love it. Watch it over and over.
It's funny because when the question comes out, I just cringe. I'm like, "Oh, that's going to be the one." You just always know when it's going to be the one.
He's the man.
The only thing they need to do, and so I was in the communications department at the University of Alabama, so I say we could shock mount the mic because he's going to pound the podium. It's going to shake the mic. It's going to resonate through the mic. If we could just put a shock mount. They've got them at WVUA, WHI, WUAL. We got shock mounts. If we could just get the coach's mic so when he pounds the podium there, it doesn't sound like an earthquake going through the thing. So that's the one thing I want from the communications department. But he's like that, whether he's talking about the Chattanooga game or he's talking about Clemson.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, when we get off to a slow start like the first quarter against Duke, you would think that we go into halftime and he's going to be, you know, fire and brimstone. But it's typically opposite of what you think. A lot of times when we're not playing well, he's very calming, very soothing, very, "Listen, this is what we're going to have to do to get us out of the hole."
You ruined my whole idea of what happened at halftime.
It is, you know, and I think that's the beautiful thing about what he's able to do is not only does he command respect when he enters a room, but he has an innate ability to feel what that room is like and know what to bring to it to get the most out of it. And that to me is God given. And I think that's why he's the best. He just has a knack for it.
man. These are great stories, and I could pick your brain. I may very well do that when we go to the news break. But once again, I want to say thank you to my buddy Ed and the crew from Taylor Martino for making this happen, and thank you for bringing this to our area.
Well, I really appreciate it. And again, it was just an idea, you know, and a
good
passion.
Good idea.
But it was made possible by Taylor Martino, and thanks to Ed, man. I've told you 100 times, but I'll tell you 100 more. You know, this is something to me that's always been a passion, and for you guys, you and Taylor Martino to believe in it and actually put that belief into action and bring this to kids is just, it's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, Baron. I do appreciate it, really.
All right, gentlemen, I appreciate both of you. Thanks a lot, and we'll be looking at those tents come Friday night. Coming right back, well, tomorrow morning at 6. I'll do another show, I think. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Maybe we'll put a tent up over Paul here as he gets...